Are waning and we'll lose our liberty, slipping one by one until there's nothing left to see. Are you willing to stand with me? Are you just going to let it be? The ranchers are first, but brother next, it may be me. We all stand together or we'll hang separately. Are you going to the tree? Are you willing to be free? It won't get any easier to regain lost liberty. Strange things are happening in this land that once was free. So brother, I ask you, are you going to stand by me?
Nobody will stand with you if you don't stand. God can't stand with you if you don't stand. And don't stand and then sit down. It's worse. It sets a precedent. You know, count the cost. The cost may be dear. It may be everything. It may be your life. Okay? But unless we're willing to value freedom more than our lives, do we really deserve freedom? God can't stand with a man until the man stands. And so God is waiting for us to stand. And at that moment that when he stands, God could stand with him. And then the other thing is that people could stand with him. You know, nobody can stand with you until you stand.
We'll drive the man down. But if he knows it, he steps across that line. You gotta whip a man's ass sometimes.
And it's time for the shooting bench. If political incorrectness offends you, or if you don't like guns, or if you don't believe our government is corrupt enough to compare to 1938 Nazi Germany, this may not be the show for you, because for the next 2 hours, that's all we're going to talk about. You need to understand that there's a storm coming. You need to understand that the storm is building strength. And most of all, you need to understand that
we are the storm.
That's right, we are the storm. Welcome to the Shooting Bench. It's the 13th of November, halfway through this month already. Unbelievable. And the intro probably needs to be changed. It's not the next 2 hours. It's the next 1 hour. On Fridays is 2 hours. So we've bounced around a little bit. We had we're still having our time fiasco here with, I got on there at 7:30, our time, Arizona time, which is now the same as Mountain time, and said, oh, I'll be on in 30 minutes. And, of course, Susie B., she's forever keeping track of me, and she jumped on and said, oh, you're coming on at 7 now, huh? And, no, it's just that I'm stupid, and I forgot about that. So I had to postpone everything for a little bit. But they're here now, so maybe I'll get it right here in the next week or two. And the reason, you know, Grandpa Jim come on Facebook and said, well, he shouldn't have to remember because Arizona's time doesn't change. And I said, well, that's, you know, because Arizona's time doesn't change is why I have to remember, because now, since our time doesn't change, whenever y'all's change, then I have to change my time of coming on the air so that you don't have to change your time to listen. Everything was set up for the Survival Circle Network around Central Time. And it would be, let's see, 8, 9, be 10 o'clock there. 8 o'clock Pacific, 11 o'clock Eastern. So 6 months out of the year, since we don't change, I'm on the same as Pacific. And then as soon as the time changes and we don't change, Now I'm on the same as Mountain. That's why I have to get used to it. For 6 months, I do the show at 8 o'clock Arizona time, and then the other 6 months, I do it at 9 o'clock Arizona time. So I'm the one that has to get used to it, so you guys can continue to schedule your time to listen at the time that you're supposed to. So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. I've got a reloading class coming up on December the 2nd on a Saturday at our new little classroom in Lakeside, Arizona. And this is a full 8-hour class. Everything you ever possibly consider about metallic cartridge reloading, metallic cartridges being rifle and handgun, not shotgun. And for some reason I'm feeling particularly charitable right now because I decided to do this. This class usually goes for $195. I've been doing it since 2008, I think, 2007, 2008. And it's a great class. Cover a lot of stuff. But for whatever reason, I decided that we would try to get more people interested in this. That's the problem with me doing this stuff, is I'm always trying to get more people prepared and, you know, edumacated on different types of things. And sometimes it consumes me. It's more important to me that people do this than it is that I make money doing it. So that's why we have to eat dog food and crackers sometimes, because I've spent all my money trying to do other stuff. But anyway, we're doing this class for $75. Never before have I ever done it for $75. It's always been $195 every time I've done it. So if you want to, even for those of you that have to travel a little bit, you definitely get your money's worth here by saving $120 on the class. So you can spend $120 on your travel and motel if you're not, you know, too terribly far away, and come join us for the class. We've got room for about 4 more right now, so anybody that's interested in that, you better jump on it. Let me check the chat room here and see who all is in the Catapult has joined us. Welcome. Good to see you. Firewall, don't see you very often. Glad you jumped in there. And Doc and Minnie and Mountain Shooter and Nan, NM Glock, Yakima Glock, a couple of Anonymous. All right, good deal. And for those that are listening through various streaming efforts out there, we're glad to have you out there. Okay, Doc, you got a deal. That's normally $195. I will accept your offer of doing it for $194.99. So that's you go ahead and come on up here from Mississippi and save that penny, and we'll definitely get you a good reloading class. Dan, the reloading class is Saturday, December 2nd, from 9 o'clock in the morning till 5 o'clock in the evening. We spend our hour for lunch doing a Q&A type thing and go over and clarify so everybody has time to eat, but we still giving out information even during lunch. So. Okay, big news, the biggest news tonight. Ryan Bundy has been released to a halfway house. Interesting, because Ryan Bundy was the only one out of the bunch of them that had represented himself throughout the entire process. All of these Bundys have been in jail now for 2 years. For doing nothing, exercising their rights. Never harmed anyone, never threatened anyone, didn't steal anything, didn't break anything, unlike the government, who did harm people, who did in animals, and did steal stuff, and did break stuff, and did lie, and they got caught lying just yesterday, or today, one or the other, today, I guess, and didn't turn out good for him. Even this judge, as unconstitutional and despicable as she is, could not get around what happened in that courtroom today. Ryan Bundy, again, has represented himself the whole time. He's out, and this is a very good thing. Now, I don't know what his conditions are for the halfway house, But being out and having more resources available and more time, and even though he's going to have to wear an ankle monitor and he's got all this other crap going on, which is just absolutely asinine. But as smart as he is and as much as he's done, as much research as he's done, he may be able to be an asset, or a better asset to his dad and his two brothers, Ammon and Dave, that are still on there. They consider Dave a threat, a menace to the public. Not Dave, Ammon, I'm sorry. They considered Ammon a menace, a threat to the public. And wouldn't let him out, wouldn't let him go to the halfway house or anything. Cliven, nothing has changed for him. So, I don't know. I don't know what Ryan will be able to do, but I know he said that his the time that he spent in jail, he hated every minute of it, his very words. But he said that he learned a lot. He learned about the law and the laws that were the rights that were being. He's already very accomplished constitutionalist. But he learned how to put that together with the legal system and has done very, very well for himself in there. And he said he learned about a lot of, about incarcerated people. He said they're not, most of them are not what you think they are. They, there's some that are like the ones you see on TV and some of these reality shows and whatever. But he said that there's a lot of them there that are just like us that have, done something minor, having their rights being violated, and just like the Bundys were. So, and what an emotional thing it was to watch as he was out there and was reunited with his wife after 2 years, and all Shauna Cox was there, and several others that y'all probably wouldn't know, but there was probably 50 people out there that were out there to meet Ryan. They were waiting on the kids. All the kids were on their way. I just, as we were watching that video, they said that the kids were about an hour away, and so the video didn't last that long, but I so wanted to watch, and there probably is video. There will be video out there. I want to watch those kids see their daddy for the first time in 2 years. The youngest was, just a few months old, not even a year old, when they put him in jail. So, God was good. There's still a lot of work to do and a lot to happen, that I'm sure glad that Ryan's out of there. Just a real quick, looks like Kentucky is going to be our next constitutional carry state. It hasn't been signed into law yet, but it's looking good, so I think they're going to make it. And that's a very good thing. That's going to make, probably 16, 17 now, something like that. I think 16. So it's coming along. As much as we complain about the rights, and rightfully so. I mean, we've got a lot to complain about. There's no question about it. But as much as we complain about all the rights that we lose, we've done well with gun rights. Here and there we stumble a little bit, but overall we've done pretty darn good nationwide. You know, now for the first time ever, for the first time since they started taking the rights away, we have now concealed carry laws in all 50 states, and 16 or 17 of those states are constitutional carry states where you don't have to have a permit. So it's a very good thing. We're going to, probably right after the break, we're going to spend some time again on, remember we when was it, Monday, last Wednesday, we did quite a bit of time on Arizona facts and trivia and stuff. Pretty interesting stuff. I got some more good ones tonight, but we'll do that after the break. It looks like the drug cartel is stepping up their game a little bit. The federal police in Mexico has captured a drone over there that was loaded down with C4. And this could change a lot of things. As of yet, this hasn't happened. There's been some activity with, I think in Syria and some of these places over there where they've been playing with this a little bit and with varying degrees of success. But if they've got this figured out now, this could be a real game changer for the cartel and for those that are trying to, those that are fighting the cartels, those that the cartel is up against there. We'll watch that and see, but I expect to hear more of that in the news. And the next thing we're probably going to hear before too awful long is those drone attacks, terrorist attacks here in the United States. So that will not be a good thing. Let me find this story here. This was an interesting story. I read it, but I don't have it all down pat. If I can find it really quick here. Here it is. New Mexico sheriff convicted of cattle rustling or cattle country crime anyway. So why would this sheriff knowingly break the law? This was out of Harding County. Sheriff Raymond Gutierrez, sworn to uphold the law and serve and protect and all that crap, you know. Well, it's didn't seem to work out. I guess temptation was just a little more than he could take there. This guy, Roderick Lujan, has a state lease for his cattle in San Miguel County, which is right next to Harding County. After Lujan put up a brand new barbed wire fence a couple years ago, he was then, Gutierrez, the sheriff, cut the fence post to fence, but he didn't just cut it in the middle. He cut sections out of it from one fence post to the next, which, you know, does a couple things. It lets cattle freely go without, you know, having to worry about getting them cut up or anything. It also makes it very difficult and time consuming to repair. So anyway, the sheriff's cattle then were found grazing on Mr. Lujan's land. And Lujan said what was more concerning than that was that the sheriff could have used Lujan's gate, which was less than 100 yards away, that was not locked from where the sheriff cut the fence. Lujan said he didn't need to cut the fence. He did so in such a manner that it couldn't be easily repaired. So cutting or as they say, injuring a fence in a ranching community is a big no-no. And it's, of course, punishable by law. A lot of things that people don't understand. We still have lots of laws in place and actively being used for cattle crimes, cattle rustling, and these kind of things. You know, there's some, I think it's in Texas, where it is still to this day, unless they've changed it here fairly recently, to this day still illegal to own a pair of fencing pliers or to have it carried in your saddlebags or something like that. I don't remember exactly what the, unless you have, you know, proof or good reason to do that. If you're just caught out riding around for no good reason with a pair of wire pliers in your saddlebags, then you can be in big trouble. But of course, obviously it's not enforced now, but it's just one of those many laws that's still on the books that a lot of people don't know about and they don't use. So anyway, the New Mexico Livestock Board launched their investigation, and according to the report, he confessed to cutting his neighbor's fence. Law enforcement, the government, at every level, from the dog catcher to, well, I don't know about the president anymore, but up until a year ago, even including the president, has gotten so out of hand, so corrupt. It's just astonishing to me that the American people have allowed this to continue in the manner that it has. But anyway, he confessed to doing it. Unlocked gate 100 yards away, and he still cut the neighbor's fence. Claimed he was landlocked out of another piece of his property. Well, that may be true. There may be, when you lease property from the feds, whether it's, or a state, either one, if you lease this property over here and you lease that property over there and someone has leased property in between there, that person has to allow you access to this other piece of land. And as Mr. Lujan said, there was an unlocked gate 100 yards away. Well, he said, open the damn gate and let the cows in. So this guy is trying to be difficult for whatever. He was found guilty, ordered to pay almost $1,700 in fines, and was sentenced to a year's probation, 364 days probation. And this Brian Green says it's a big deal because this grass is my livelihood. And this is a rancher in southern Torrance County. His fence wasn't cut, but to put things in perspective, he said, I'm not a particularly violent person, but I know a lot of my neighbors, if it were to happen to them, it might be a shooting type response. I mean, it's that serious. Crime right out of the Old West, dating back to the years when ranchers first started fencing. And it goes on to talk about the wars and that were started over fencing and the patented the barbed wire and all this kind of stuff that we can talk about some other time, I guess. But anyway. So, wonder how much longer he's going to be sheriff, or if he is still sheriff anymore. There's, what time is it? We got time to do this. You know, for years and years, more so when I was a kid, I can remember seeing wild horses regularly when we used to go deer hunting and stuff. Lots of wild horses out in Carson National Forest and up in there in New Mexico. And it was just nobody bothered them. Of course, there was a lot of people. They'd shoot them, you know, sometimes just for the heck of it. Wasn't any laws protecting them. And I never did quite understand what it was so fascinating about shooting a horse. But and I'll have to say that there was three of them one time that and I don't think these were wild. I think they belonged to the Jicarilla Apaches. I have a cousin that has a monstrous ranch in northern New Mexico. And it got to a point where these horses would, he'd called the tribe and the game warden and everything, and these horses kept destroying fences and turning his horses out and kept on and kept on, and nobody would ever come get it. This went on for several months. And we did finally wind up shooting them and getting rid of them. But that was a little different case than what this story is talking about. What I don't understand is why the BLM feels that they need to get rid of 90,000 horses and burros. Get out in New Mexico, Arizona, Wyoming, Colorado, Montana, Nevada, lots and lots of wild horses. You get out there and look, and you can find wild horses out there. I can show you some right outside of Cody, Wyoming. Well, I don't know. They were there when I was there. That was a long time ago. But they are trying to get rid of 90,000. Now, why? What are they hurting? They've been there since the Spaniards were here. A lot of these horses were originally bred. Now, some of them, of course, were feral horses that have been turned out. And they've done well out there. They've adapted well. But a lot of these are seriously wild horses that have been there since the, 15, 16, 1700s, whenever it was. Coronado came through here. Now, Coronado came through New Mexico, I think, in around 1650, 1670, somewhere in there. Coronado and some of his bunch put their, some of the conquistadors anyway, I guess it was Coronado, put their name in a place called Inscription Rock, El Moro, over there on Highway 53 in New Mexico. And that was 16-something. And a lot of those horses have been here since then. So why do we need to kill 90,000 of them? You can buy these horses. They round these horses up and they sell them for $125. And you have to prove your worthiness. You have to prove that you have a good home for them and a good reason to have them and have a nice place for them. So you got to prove all this stuff that you're going to be good to them and that you deserve to have a horse. And now they're going to go kill 90,000. Why don't they give them away? Why don't they catch 90,000 of them and say, well, here you go. You know, get them their shots and do whatever you need to do and go forth and give it a good home. Or go forth and don't give it a good home. I don't care. We're going to kill them anyway. So here, just take the damn horse. Why is it we're going to pay government sharpshooters to fly around in helicopters and shoot 90,000 horses? That's what you do to coyotes and wolves and liberals. Well, maybe we wouldn't go quite that far, but you know what I'm talking about. So the doc says the Spanish even introduced Nancy Pelosi. I misread that. It says pigs. I'm sorry. Spanish introduced pigs to North America. My eyes are getting bad. So let's see. Let me check my chat room here and see what's going on. I'm way behind. For those of you that have just joined us, I don't know if you heard or not, but Ryan Bundy was released to a halfway house tonight. Very emotional reunion with his wife. I watched the video. It was very good. Really happy for the family, and I feel bad for the two brothers and the dad, Clive and Dave and Ammon, is still sitting in there, but it's looking good. I tell you, let me throw another little piece in there with that. And that is Dan Love. Dan Love is, they won't even allow his testimony. Dan Love is in a lot of trouble. He's made some serious mistakes. We may wind up seeing him go up the river too, which would be awesome. There's not anything, I would rather see him go to prison than to be hung. Or maybe go to prison and be hung later or something, I don't know. But one of these prisons would be a very, very nice place for Dan Love to spend quite a few years. Nicely. So, anyway. All right, well, we're just about at break time. We've got, what else today? Hey, I'm right on schedule, too. How about that? First time ever. Well, maybe not quite ever, but first time for a while. So what I'm going to do here, I'm going to throw in a little bit of stuff here for a break, and I'll be back in a little bit.
I don't like to brag.
Hey, stop. Don't go there. Why did we do that? What am I missing here? There it is. Well, let's try that again.
I'll be back.
That's better.
Broke chest line. Freedom scribbled on your sign. Headline, New York Times. Standing on the...
You come on! And hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same. So help me God. Revolution. Loading now. Revolution. Loading now. Revolution. Loading now. Revolution. Welcome back to another segment of the Shooting Bench, right here on the Survival Circle Radio Network. That ain't country. Lord have mercy. That ain't country. Yeah, we country. All right. We're back. Okay, let's see. We stopped off. We're going to change gears here a little bit. We stopped off last week on what is considered to be the oldest continuously inhabited community in America. That is Oraibi, I think they how they pronounce that, at the Hopi Village in Navajo County, Arizona, a neighboring county to where we're at right now. But there's standby here just a second. There it is. Let's move on here with some of these Arizona facts. A lot of stuff we're finding out here of all the ones we did last week, that Arizona has a lot of firsts and a lot of biggest and a lot of things that other states don't have. And there's another one coming up here right now. Some of you might remember the name Del Webb. Del Webb was, he was the co-owner of the New York Yankees back in the day. It's been quite a while back. He died in 74 and he was 75 years old And he was also a big real estate developer, and he developed Sun City. Anybody that spent any time in Arizona, you know about Sun City back in 1960. It was the first 55-plus active adult retirement community in the United States. And still going strong. It's a big deal down there. Petrified wood is the official state fossil. Petrified forest is just about on those 60 miles north and a tiny bit. It's due north of where we're at right now. About 60 miles, right up on I-40 from here. I-40 is 60 miles as the crow flies from here. About 80, 75 or 80 driving. And if you go up to Petrified National Forest, there are full logs, you know, 3 or 4 feet in diameter. And some of them, I don't remember what the length is. There's still some that are, you know, probably 40, 50 feet long, laying around up there. Lots of, it's just a really neat deal to see petrified wood everywhere, as far as you can see, in every direction if you get out there in the middle of it. And there's petrified wood everywhere. And that is our state fossil. Let's see, some of the founders of San Francisco in 1776 were Spanish colonists from Tubac, Arizona. Phoenix originated in 1866 as a hay camp to supply military post Camp McDowell, which is still down there. And hey, Cujo just joined us. Not Cujo. Cujo's nicer than Cujo was. A hay camp. I can't fathom, for those of you that have never been down to southern Arizona, I guess that makes a little bit of sense because of the, you know, Pancho Villa and all the Indian raiders and all this stuff down there. So I guess that's why Camp McDowell was there.
And in order to supply Camp McDowell, they had to have a camp somewhere. I guess that's where Phoenix started, 1866. Rainfall averages from Arizona range from less than 3 inches a year in the deserts to more than 30 inches a year in the mountains, rising to a height of 12,643 feet. Mount Humphreys, north of Flagstaff, is the state's highest mountain. You can see Mount Humphreys on Interstate 40 from a hell of a long ways away. And a beautiful mountain. Man, it's nice. Yakima Glock, that's funny. You win the prize tonight for the funny thing you said. Yakima Glock says, for those of you not on the chat room, thought John McCain was Arizona's state fossil. That's good. I'll have to remember that one. Let's see. And by the way, we have a 10,000-foot mountain. Oh, I think I told you that last time. 10,000-foot mountain right out my back door here. Roadrunners, not just in cartoons. In Arizona, you'll see them running up to 17 miles an hour. There's a lot of roadrunners here. Amy, I didn't tell you I saw a roadrunner down here at the gate the other day, did I? Yeah, right here at the cattle garden. Yeah. You know, when I was a kid, we used to drive from Farmington, New Mexico. We used to drive down what used to be called State Highway 666. And that was went from Shiprock, New Mexico to Gallup, New Mexico. And we'd go there to get to Luna and you know, down that road and Gallup and various other places, and Flagstaff. And we were driving down that road one time, and I'd never seen a roadrunner before. I was like 5, you know, or something. I don't know. I was a little bitty. And my mom said, there's a roadrunner. So I'm looking around for something that looks like an ostrich, you know, because the only roadrunner I'd ever seen was the ones on the cartoons. And I figured, well, that's just a, you know, a purple version of a real roadrunner. I had no idea. So I'm looking for something 5 feet tall out there. I didn't know they were 5 inches tall. So I missed the Roadrunner. I didn't see that one. It was a lot of years after that I finally saw my first real live Roadrunner. But I've seen a million of them since then. But I'll never forget that first time. That first time I didn't see a Roadrunner. Let's see. The saguaro cactus, the largest cactus found in the United States, can grow as high as a 5-story building. Is native to the Sonoran Desert, and that's the only place. You know, you see these cactus in cartoons and some of the old movies and stuff. The big ones that stand up look like a guy standing with his arms up, you know. The only place in the world that you'll find those is right down south of where we're at right now. It's the only place. And it is they're protected. And you can damn sure get in trouble if you get caught, you know, damaging one or chopping one down or shooting at one, or, you know, pinning a target to it and shooting it or anything like that. That is a big no-no. There's millions of them down there. I mean, they're thick everywhere. But then you get to a certain point, chopped off, it's done. No more. They don't just thin out. There's just no more. And why that is, I have no idea. It's kind of weird. Mountain Shooter, you're right. That was called Highway 666, was called the Devil's Highway. And here, when was it? Probably, I don't know, 10, 12 years ago, something like that. They changed it to Highway 471, I believe it is. And the reason they did that is because it was considered the Devil's Highway. And complaints of it, every time somebody would have a wreck or something, you know, that, well, it was because it was the Devil's Highway. And the other thing is they took, people kept taking the signs, the devil worshipers and the Satanists would go and take the highway signs. They wanted those signs that had the New Mexico emblem, the Zia, on it with the 666 in the middle of it. So they were constantly replacing those signs. Finally, they got tired of it and just renamed it, renumbered it to 471 or 371. I don't remember. I think it's 471. Let's see. Sandra Day O'Connor, first woman appointed to the U.S. Supreme Court, grew up on a large ranch near Duncan, Arizona. The best preserved meteor crater in the world is near Winslow, Arizona. If you drive down I-40, you'll see, when you get close to Winslow, you'll see a sign that says Meteor Crater. Neat deal. Pretty pretty damn respectable hole in the ground. If you want to go check that out, it's not too far off the highway down there. Average state elevation, 4,000 feet. Navajo Nation spans 27,000 square miles across the states of Utah, Arizona, and New Mexico, but its capital is in Window Rock, Arizona. About probably 20% of Arizona, or close, damn close to 20%, is a Navajo Indian Reservation. And it's the northeast corner of Arizona, that entire from I-40 all the way to the state line, and from the New Mexico state line west to Highway 89, that is all Navajo Nation, Navajo Reservation. And that's not near all of it, because there's still, you know, some of it in New Mexico. Not a whole lot in Utah, just a little bit, but. The amount of copper used to make the copper dome on top of the Arizona's Capitol building is equivalent to the amount used in 4.8 million pennies. Why that's important, I don't know, but it's one of our facts here, so there you go. Near Yuma, Colorado, near Yuma, Arizona, the Colorado River dips to 70 feet below sea level. I didn't know that. Making it the lowest point in the state. I had no idea. I thought the only place that was below sea level in the United States was Death Valley. And I'll be darned. The geographic center of Arizona is 50 miles southeast of Prescott, near the city and the community of Mayer, Arizona. You could pile four 1,300-foot skyscrapers on top of each other, and they would not reach the rim of the Grand Canyon. Wouldn't it be just easier to say that it's over a mile deep? Yeah. Grand Canyon's quite a spectacle. If you've never seen it, it is definitely worth the trip. I would strongly encourage you, if you're going to take a vacation sometime, come to Arizona. We have a lot of stuff to see, and the Grand Canyon is one of them. If you're physically able and feeling froggy, then take the hike down to the bottom. Don't try to do it in one day. If you're exceptionally well fit, you can do it in a day. But it's a long, hard damn day, I'll promise you that. But generally you'd want to go down, take a very, very light sleeping bag. Now, the only time I ever did it, we hiked down when I was in Boy Scouts, and we went down, took all our gear with us, and we just pitched a tent and camped. And actually, we didn't even have tents; we just threw sleeping bag out on the ground because it was pretty warm down there. And I don't know if they let you still do that anymore or not, but they have some. I think they do. I think they still have some campgrounds. We weren't even really established campgrounds when we went. We just got down there, and the forest rangers said, "Just go throw your sleeping bags out over there somewhere." So, and that's the way to do it. And they have a little motel type thing down there too. So if you hike down, you can spend the night. I would certainly, you have to make reservations before you do. But it is a remarkable sight, Grand Canyon is, and even if you don't walk down to it, it's stay up on top. They got a bus tour that goes, on the south rim of the Grand Canyon. You can take the bus tour, and they stop every so often. And for certain deals, you get out and look at these different sites in the Grand Canyon. And it is truly remarkable. Go to my Facebook page and go through my pictures, and you can see I had my two youngest daughters, and Amy and I, we were over there and got some good pictures of it. Check it out. If you want to spend a great weekend sometime, we'll come to Arizona. Hottest temperature recorded in Arizona was 128 degrees at Lake Havasu City in June of 1994. Not only is that the hottest recorded in Arizona in 2011, 2000 and something, they changed that to the world record, the world hottest temperature. It was previously recorded in Libya, I think it was, And they found that there was some inconsistencies there. It may or may not have been that hot. And because of the asphalt and everything from the place where they actually recorded that temperature, they said, no, that was not what it was. So according to all that is holy in temperatures right now, the record still stands at 128 degrees. The coldest, 40 below zero, that's at Holly Lake in January 1971. And that's not too far off from where we were. I remember when we were in Luna, we did a show down there a day or so after we had 38 below. I think officially at the Forest Service, it was 35 below zero. I've got pictures of it posted out there. Our thermometer said 38 below zero. It's a life-changing experience when you get down 20, 30, 40 below zero, I guarantee you. Saguaro cactus can store up to 9 tons of water. I guess that's not unusual when you take something that's 90% water anyway and 50 foot tall and 2 feet in diameter or something like that. I guess that's certainly enough to hold 9 tons of water. The state of Massachusetts could fit inside Maricopa County. Maricopa County is the county where Phoenix is. It is 9,922 square miles. The population of Maricopa County is about, I think it's about 6 million, because there's 4 million just in Phoenix alone. And Phoenix does take up a large portion of Maricopa County. And that is, overwhelmingly, that is the biggest population center in Arizona. If you took that out, there'd only be, 114 people left in Arizona or whatever. And this is a neat one here. The westernmost battle of the Civil War was fought at Picacho Pass on 15 April 1862 near Picacho Peak in Pinal County. Pinal County is almost due south of us, a little bit west down, I'm not sure, I think Globe is in Pinal County, I'm not positive, but. Let's see, 11.2 million acres of national forest and a fourth of the state is forested. Remember, one of the things that we mentioned Wednesday was that the largest contiguous stand of ponderosa pines in the world is right here in Arizona. Goes from up north of Flagstaff all the way down here to Prescott or down anyway, past the rim. What the hell is the name of the rim out there? The Mogollon Rim. What? Not Mogollon. What is it? Anyway, I don't remember. I think so. Anyway, Wyatt Earp was neither the town marshal nor the sheriff in Tombstone at the time of the shootout of the OK Corral. His brother Virgil was the town marshal. On June 6, 1936, the first barrel of tequila produced in the United States rolled off the production line in Nogales, Arizona. Oh, I bet that was something to celebrate. The Sonoran Desert is the most biologically diverse desert in North America. And by biologically diverse, I think they're talking about the number of critters that's down there and plants. If you go down in the Sonoran Desert and just driving down the highway, even better if you find a little dirt road and get off there and walk around and look a little bit. It is absolutely amazing. The desert doesn't have the type of beauty that, Humphreys Peak does or Pikes Peak or Grand Canyon or whatever. When you get into the desert down here, you see, especially when the cactus are blooming, there's the most beautiful flowers you have ever witnessed in your life. There is no comparison of anything in the world that I know of as pretty as these cactus flowers. So it's definitely got its own brand of beauty there. Bisbee, Arizona. And I didn't know this. The nation's southernmost mile-high city. You know, they used to say, when I was a kid in Farmington, the signs as you come into the city limit said the elevation was 5,280 feet my whole life. And then Denver wanted to claim the mile-high city. And now Farmington says 5,300, I think. Or, yeah, I think it says 5,300. So. But so it's grown 20 feet, I guess. But as soon as Denver seized that title of Mile High City, then Farmington was no longer 5,280 feet. The largest man-made lakes in the United States are Lake Mead and Lake Powell, both of them in Arizona. The longest remaining intact section of Route 66 can be found in Arizona, runs from Seligman to Topak. Total of 157 unbroken miles. Now, there's something else. When you come out here to Grand Canyon, you have got to go and spend some time in Seligman. Little bitty town, but its claim to fame is, number one, Highway 66, Route 66, as I call it, is the main street through Seligman still. When I was a kid, that was the main drag to get to California. And obviously I-40 now goes around that. But it is the neatest little town. There's several places there. It's all 60s, the theme, I guess you want to call it. There's 60s cars sitting around all over the place. And every restaurant and every little store you go in, there's 60s, everything from, you know, Coke bottles and postcards and sweaters and hats and everything. Is just, you really go back in time. Kojo, thanks for joining us, buddy. It's been a long time since I've seen you. You really go back in time when you go to Seligman. And my memory is terrible, but what's that place where we eat there, babe? I'll be damned. Anyway, if you're coming in from the west, there'll be a big cafe on your, there's one on your right and one on your left. The one on your left is a Roadkill Cafe. The one right straight across from it is, what in the heck? Nan, you probably know what that is. You've probably been to Seligman, haven't you? You're close enough. I'll be damned, I've eaten there 100 times and I can't remember. They have the best bratwurst in this side of Fulda, Germany. It's a very, very Bavarian-styled restaurant. Excellent food. So that should be one of your other stops when you come to see the Grand Canyon. The 13 stripes on the... Oh, by the way, back to Route 66. If you go to Grants, New Mexico, well, you go to Gallup, there's still part of the main street of Gallup is still... It's not the longest. It's only, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 miles long. Is still the original Route 66 roadbed. And a lot of the frontage road down I-40 all through Arizona and New Mexico and other places is Route 66. And if you get to Grants, New Mexico, Santa Fe Avenue is the main drag through Farmington. That is still, that was the highway where all the trucks and everything went back in the day. That was Route 66. The 13 stripes on the Arizona flag represent the 13 original colonies in the United States. I've only got a couple more of these, so I'm going to go ahead and finish it up. The negotiations for Geronimo's final surrender took place in what is now in Skeleton Canyon, which is close to what is now Douglas, Arizona, in 1886. Prescott, Arizona, home of the world's oldest raid rodeo. Payson, Arizona, is the home of the world's oldest continuous rodeo, both of which date back to the 1880s. Now, speaking of rodeo, we go to Cody, Wyoming. Cody, Wyoming is it's where they have a rodeo there every single night. when I was there, I don't remember if they, or maybe it's just through the summer. Maybe it's just through the summer they have. Anyway, they have rodeo every night for a period of time there anyway. Karchner Caverns near Benson, Arizona. Massive limestone cavern with 13,000 feet of passages, two rooms as long as football fields, and one of the world's longest soda straw stalactites measuring 21 feet and 3 inches. So there you have it. There's the whole list of Arizona trivia there. So what I'm going to need to do here, I'm going to have to get ready to close. It is, we're doing good. We still got a couple of minutes. So I'm glad all of you joined us tonight. And remember the reloading class coming up in Lakeside on the 2nd of November. Damn it. The 2nd of December on Saturday. The 2nd of November is long since passed. So no, it's not the 2nd of November. 2nd of December. And it has been reduced to $120 for this class. And we'll spend a lot of time, you'll learn in this class just how much money you really do save in reloading. It's not just a hobby. It's if you're a shooter at all, at the lowest degree of shooting, I mean, I'd say the lowest. I mean, there's some of us out there that shoot, you know, 10 rounds a year. You know, reloading is probably not profitable for you. But if you shoot at all, if you get out and practice a little bit. If you shoot, you know, even a couple hundred rounds a year, then reloading will save you money. And the more you shoot, the more money you save. And the more, if you're shooting some of your extravagant rifles, some of your bigger calibers and stuff, your 3378s and 338 Win Mags and this and that and the other, you will most assuredly save a fortune when you reload. I say that, but what happens is you wind up saving so much money, it just means that you shoot more. So you're spending about the same amount of money. You're just getting to shoot a whole lot more for the money that you spend. But we'll go over every conceivable facet of metallic cartridge reloading. Some of the troubleshooting, some of the problems you run into and whatnot. And we'll have presses set up where you'll actually be able to do some reloading. Not much, you know, 5 or 10 rounds or something. You're not going to spend all day doing it. We've got a lot of stuff to cover. But you will be allowed to put a few rounds together and see how it turns out. All right, we just about got this thing ready to go. So be sure if you've this is your first time joining us, come back and join us Wednesday. We try to have a few more firearms-related stuff going on Wednesdays. And then Fridays, man, if you're a classic country music fan, then you need to come and join us on Friday nights. Fridays is 2 hours. And it's usually we have a theme of some kind. Sometimes we just play a whole bunch of classic country music, just whatever comes along. All right, seems like we're having a little bit of trouble here getting this. There we go. All right, I think it's running. We'll shut it down here and find out if it's running. All right. Good night, all. And we'll see you Wednesday, and thanks for joining me. Well, that wraps up another edition of the Shooting Bench. Join me Monday and Wednesday from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, and again on Fridays from 7 to 10 for the Shooting Bench. Good night. Thanks for joining. No explanation, no reconciliation. No, let's talk it over. Number I can call. Goodbye says it all.